The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 433 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. That's my handle on Twitter, TheSportsRPT. We are coming to you live on this Labor Day. Hope everyone's enjoying the holiday. Big show coming up. It is time for my 2016 NFL preview special. I'll go through the league division by division, talk about every team, and as a bonus, I'll give you some truly lousy predictions. Actually, 2 years ago, I went with New England to win the Super Bowl, and they did. Last year, I picked Seattle. They lost in the divisional round of the playoffs to Carolina, 31-24. Not a terrible play there. I called for Denver to reach the AFC Championship game last season, and that came true. Too bad I picked the Colts to beat the Broncos in that game. Hey, you can't win them all, right? If I did, I'd be hanging out at the Bellagio or Wynn or New York, New York. They have a great dueling piano bar out there. I'd be out in Vegas. You know what I did on Saturday? Absolutely nothing but watch college football. I plopped down on my couch at noon and was there until midnight. This was the best opening weekend in college football history. There were marquee matchups all day long on Saturday. And how about Notre Dame, Texas, Sunday night? What a game that was. We'll talk about it all on episode 433 of the Sports Report podcast. Again, I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. That's a great way for you to interact with the show and keep those five-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. Let's start with the NFL, and we'll begin in the NFC East where the Eagles reside. They pulled off a blockbuster trade this weekend, sending Sam Bradford to Minnesota. I live about an hour from Philadelphia. I follow the Eagles very, very closely. My radio station has carried the Eagles for many, many years. Fans here could not believe that the Vikings offered a number one and a number four for Bradford. A first and a fourth round pick for Sam Bradford. I call this a godfather trade. Minnesota made an offer that the Eagles could not refuse. Nobody thought that Philadelphia would get a first-round pick for Sam Bradford. It's all about supply and demand. Good quarterbacks are in short supply in the NFL. Plus, Minnesota is in a win-now mode. They are not messing around. They have Adrian Peterson. He's still a very productive back. They have a top-notch defense. They are all in. Here's the problem. Bradford simply isn't that good. I saw him every game that he played last season, and his agent will point out a few games at the end of the year. Go look at the defenses that he played at the end of the season when he was putting up big numbers. Go look where those defenses rank in the NFL. They were horrendous. The deal with Bradford hasn't changed. He's just okay. It's not awful. He is certainly not elite. He never lived up to the hype of being the number one overall pick out of Oklahoma. Bradford's record as a starter is 25-37-1. His career completion percentage is 60%. Everybody talks about how accurate he is. 60%. And he's known for throwing interceptions. Plus, we all know the injury history. Guy just can't stay healthy. And availability has to be a factor in pro sports. Last year, 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Anybody doing cartwheels over those numbers? Had a quarterback rating of 86. If people think that he's going to step in for the injured Teddy Bridgewater, and everybody hated to see Bridgewater go down, everybody who talks about him says what a good kid he is. And again, that team was ready to go this year. I mean, they were looking to do big, big things. But if people think Bradford's going to come in and start lighting things up in Minnesota, I think they have another thing coming. He has never been a star. Your thoughts on the trade, Bradford to Minnesota for a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Before I get into my division-by-division breakdown of the NFL, I want to tell you about our great sponsor today, and that, of course, is iHome. They've been with the show for a long, long time. Great company. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof, rust-proof, and military-standard shock-proof. They're tough. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. That is a winning combination. iHome also offers a full line of quality headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. Go to the website iHomeAudio.com. Look at all of their great products. You can also check out their apps and accessories. iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. That's iHomeAudio.com. The sound quality of their products cannot be beat. And also, they look really, really cool. They're sharp. Website again is iHomeAudio.com. All right, let's dig into my NFL preview now. I was planning on picking Dallas to win the NFC least, which shows once again that I am the king of objectivity and captain of reality. Homerism is not permitted on this podcast because I am a Redskins fan. And yet, I was going to pick Dallas. However, the back injury to Tony Romo changed my mind. Dak Prescott looked terrific in the preseason, but the preseason means two things to me. Jack and squat. Always has, always will. I also don't love the Cowboys' defense, so I am going with Washington. The Redskins won the division last year. 9-7 is all that it took. Getting Josh Norman to me is huge. The NFL is a passing league and you need good corners. Everybody brings up how the Redskins struggle against the run, which is true. I understand that. But it's not about 3 yards in a cloud of dust anymore. How many NFL teams are really committed? I mean, really committed to running the football? Very few. You need guys to cover all these star receivers out there. Look at your fantasy football draft and all the receivers that go early in the drafts. So Josh Norman from Carolina, big, big pickup. Kirk Cousins impressed a lot of people last season. I still want to see more, but Washington has really good skill guys at wide receiver and at tight end. I was down in Richmond this summer with my family, visiting my brother, got to go to training camp. And you look at the skill guys, I mean, they have a lot of weapons there for Cousins to utilize. And there's a lot of positive energy surrounding this team. I don't see a whole lot of that with the other clubs in this division. Giants have been 6-10 2 years in a row. Yes, they can score, but can they stop anyone? Now, they added Vernon and they added Harrison up front. They drafted Eli Apple. Is that enough? We'll see. You have a new head coach in Ben McAdoo. Doug Peterson takes over for Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. Another new head coach there. Carson Wentz is now the number one quarterback. Peterson announced today that he will start the opener Sunday against the Cleveland Browns at Lincoln Financial Field. But the Eagles lack weapons at the skill spots. They're the opposite of the Redskins. Their defense was terrible last season. Now, Jim Schwartz has taken over as the D coordinator, and they've switched from a 3-4 to a 4-3, which better suits Fletcher Cox, who is a stud at D tackle. I really question the Eagles' corners, though. I think you can throw against that team all day. Philadelphia is in rebuild mode, and now you have a rookie starting day one. This is a very mediocre division, not one great team. Don't expect anybody to run away and hide. In the NFC North, I already talked a little bit about the Vikings, who went 11-5 last season, won the division. I feel really bad for Teddy Bridgewater with that devastating knee injury, which led to the Bradford trade. Minnesota's defense is the real deal. But with Jordy Nelson returning from injury, I'm picking Green Bay to win this division. Aaron Rodgers versus Sam Bradford. I rest my case. Judge Wapner, bring in Rusty the bailiff and Doug Llewellyn, the court reporter. I used to love that show. Forget about Judge Judy and Judge Joe Brown. Now they have a million judges. Judge Wapner was the man. Eddie Lacy has lost weight, better shape. That should help Green Bay be more balanced on offense. Chicago is going to be better with Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White together at wide receiver. Losing Forte and Bennett hurts, though. Losing a good running back and a tight end there. They hope that Leonard Floyd, Jonathan Bullard, and Danny Trevathan will boost that defense. They need some fresh faces there. Bears won't be 6-10 again. As for Detroit, Megatron is gone. Anquan Boldin and Marvin Jones come to town. They'll be able to throw it. They always do. But the Lions' running game was dead last in 2015. They have a few really, really nice pieces on defense, but not enough as a whole. To the NFC South, this is a no-brainer. Carolina went 15-1 last year. Nobody else in this division was over 500. Panthers have questions at corner now that Norman left for Washington, but the front seven is loaded, and they get Kelvin Benjamin back from injury. Big, big target for Cam Newton. He would have been their number one receiver a year ago. I don't see any way you can pick anyone in this division besides the Panthers. Saints gave up the most points in the league. Buccaneers weren't much better. Now, Tampa Bay is trying to address that with Vernon Hargraves, Noah Spence, Brent Grimes, Robert Ayers, Daryl Smith. They still have McCoy up front, David at linebacker. Those are superstar players. On offense, Jameis Winston has options, Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson at receiver, Doug Martin at running back. Dirk Cutter takes over for Lovie Smith as the head coach. I can see Tampa Bay getting to the 500 mark, maybe even 9-7 this year. Atlanta desperately needs a pass rush, only 19 sacks all last season. Vic Beasley, big disappointment. They added Dwight Freeney and Courtney Upshaw. Matt Ryan needs to put up better numbers than 21 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman are quite a 1-2 punch at receiver and running back. Falcons only averaged 21 points per game, though, last year. I am still a Drew Brees fan. He has good receivers with Cooks and Snead. And keep your eye on rookie Michael Thomas. They're going to score points. On defense, Nick Fairley and Paul Kruger will be new faces on the D-line, which has been an issue for the Saints. Hard to trust that defense. NFC West, this is clearly a two-team race. Seattle and Arizona, two of the best in the league. Both can play defense. Arizona traded for Chandler Jones, 12.5 sacks last year. Cardinals drafted Robert Kendiche out of Ole Miss. He has big-time ability, needs to mature, put it all together. In the secondary, you have Patrick Peterson, you have the Honey Badger, Ty Matthew. Carson Palmer was outstanding last year until that NFC Championship game when he melted down. He's going to be 37 in December, so the time is now for Arizona. Same's true for Seattle. You know all about that defense. I don't need to tell you about them. They allowed the fewest points in the league. Marshawn Lynch retires. I wonder about the Seahawks' offensive line. Will they protect Russell Wilson? And he has a knack of making something out of nothing, but you'd prefer not to be running for your life all the time. Doug Baldwin coming off a career year. I really, really had a hard time picking between these two teams. I think it's going to be difficult for Arizona to be as good as they were last season. They went 13-3, set the bar so high. So I'm picking Seattle by a nose at the wire. Rams are in L.A., and they're counting on Jared Goff to be the franchise quarterback. Chip Kelly's at the helm now in San Francisco. Colin Kaepernick's in the news every day now. So there are storylines with these other two squads, but talent-wise, they are not close to Seattle and Arizona. Now we go to the AFC. We begin in the East. This is always the easiest division. The Patriots are, unless you're looking for a trendy McTrenderson pick, and there are some media bobbleheads out there that do that, just try to make off-the-wall picks so people will notice them. I don't do that. Call me crazy. I actually prefer to be right. So I'm going with the Patriots. New England's won 7 straight division titles, 13 in the last 15 years. How do you argue with that? Now, Tom Brady has been the key, and he's going to be out a quarter of the season. It'll be the Jimmy Garoppolo show early. I love the tight end combination of Gronk and Martellus Bennett to go with Edelman and Amendola at wide receiver. Going against Bill Belichick, it's like going against Nick Saban in Alabama. Just not a smart move. When I look at the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins, I see teams, you know, 7-9, 9-7. Maybe the Jets could get to 10 wins. The Bills have had a rash of injuries this preseason with Shaq Lawson and Reggie Ragland, 2 young players who they thought could contribute. They haven't been to the playoffs since 1999. Dolphins have a new coach in Adam Gase. A jury's still out on Ryan Tannehill. He's solid, not elite. Jets have the best shot to knock off the Patriots. They added Matt Forte. My concerns, the offensive line, and can Ryan Fitzpatrick duplicate his career year? AFC North, this is a black and blue division. You better bring your hard hat here. These teams don't like each other at all. Steelers have won 5 of the last 6 versus the Bengals, so I'm taking Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell suspended 3 games. I don't like that. Martavis Bryant is done for the whole season. But once Bell is back, I think the offense is going to roll again. You have Antonio Brown. You have Big Ben. Only New England scored more points in the AFC last season. Pittsburgh's front 7 on defense should be very good. I'll go Big Ben over Andy Dalton. Ravens were decimated by injuries to star players, leading to a 5-11 campaign. I think they'll be better. Pass rush is an issue. Benjamin Watson out for the year with an Achilles tendon injury. But I do like the addition of Eric Weddle and a rookie, Ronnie Stanley, on that O-line. As for the Browns, RG3 is the latest quarterback in Cleveland. That has been a revolving door since, geez, Bernie Kosar. No quarterback usually equals no shot in the NFL. AFC South, only one team was over 500 in 2015. Houston went 9-7, and the Texans got thumped 30-0 at home by Kansas City in the playoffs. Brock Osweiler takes over under center in Houston. He got $72 million. Texans brought in Lamar Miller. They drafted Will Fuller and Braxton Miller. We know they can play defense. That hasn't been the issue there. Colts went 8-8, and Andrew Luck only played 7 games. I have not written him off. I know some have. No way I do that. Just 2 years ago, the guy threw 40 touchdowns. Okay. You know, sometimes we have short-term memories in this business. I just don't trust the Colts up front to protect Andrew Luck, and their defense remains a weakness. They gave up 25 points a game last year. The Jaguars have a lot of potential. Their stock is going up. Blake Bortles has wide receivers who can definitely play. On defense, Dante Fowler, Jalen Ramsey, they have big upsides there. Miles Jack as well. Jacksonville is on the rise, but not there yet. I'm going to go with Houston. That defense with J.J. Watt keeps them in a lot of games. Tennessee is going to try and ground and pound with Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray and a rookie offensive lineman, Jack Conklin. A running attack will help Marcus Mariota, but Titans aren't on the level with the good teams in this league. AFC West, the Peyton Manning era is over in Denver. Mark Sanchez, we hardly knew ye. He is a Cowboy now. I've never been a Sanchez fan. He's most well known for a butt fumble. Too many turnovers for me. And the Jets teams that had success with him, it was because of the defense, not Sanchez. Trevor Siemian out of Northwestern is the Broncos quarterback. No way they go 12-4 again, even with that spectacular defense that won them a Super Bowl. 9 or 10 wins is more likely. Paxton Lynch is the quarterback of the future there. Speaking of defense, Kansas City allowed fewer points than even Denver last season. Only Cincinnati and Seattle gave up fewer points than the Chiefs. Alex Smith doesn't turn the ball over. Jeremy Maclin, Travis Kelce are his go-to guys. Jamal Charles is returning from ACL surgery. Denver's won 5 straight AFC West titles. I'll give the nod to Kansas City because of quarterback stability, and Andy Reid is a good coach. Oakland is another stock-up team. Derek Carr to Amari Cooper has been fun to watch. This is year 3 now for Carr. The Raiders were players in free agency. They acquired Sean Smith, Bruce Irvin, Reggie Nelson. They drafted safety Carl Joseph. Oakland's gone through 13 straight seasons without a winning record, but the pieces are in place for that to end in 2016. Chargers should be better too. 4-12 last year. Melvin Gordon had a rough rookie season. Keenan Allen got hurt. He is back now. Antonio Gates still there with Phillip Rivers. They brought in Travis Benjamin. I think he's a big play target. Joey Bosa finally signed a contract. I was tired of hearing about that saga every stinking day. I think the AFC West will be competitive. Now, to the moment you've all been waiting for, my 2016 NFL predictions. Division winners, NFC, to recap, Redskins, Packers, Panthers, Seahawks, AFC division winners, Patriots, Steelers, Texans, Chiefs, NFC wildcard teams. I'm going Cardinals and Vikings, even without Bridgewater. AFC wildcard teams, the Bengals. Last one, I thought for a second, maybe throw the Raiders in there, maybe the Broncos. I decided to go with those J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. So Bengals and Jets, my wild card teams in the AFC, in the NFC, Cardinals and Vikings. NFC Championship game, this was tough. I think there are 4 teams for only 2 spots. You have Green Bay, Carolina, Seattle, Arizona. I went Carolina versus Seattle. Some great defenses there. AFC Championship game. I thought this was easier. Patriots, Steelers. Drum roll provided by you. The Super Bowl. Seahawks, Steelers. And my Super Bowl 51 champion is the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle over Pittsburgh. What do you think? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Again, NFC Championship game, I have Seattle beating Carolina. AFC Championship game, I have Pittsburgh over New England. And then I have Seattle winning it all. Let me know your thoughts on Twitter. You agree, disagree? You probably disagree, and you'll probably be right. I'm on Twitter at the Sports RPT. This is episode number 433 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts on the Grizz, grizzlyproductions.tv. New shows every Monday, even on the holiday here. We're coming at you live. Show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. Love to see those 5-star reviews from you. And I'm on Twitter again at the Sports RPT. If you're a college football fan, you were in heaven this weekend. Props to all of these top 25 programs who are going out and playing each other in the non-conference portion of the schedule. It is awesome for fans. Nobody wants to see a Fat Albert schedule that's loaded with cupcakes. People were taking shots at the SEC over the weekend because 6 teams in the conference lost, but it's not like Kentucky and Vanderbilt and Missouri are good teams. And Auburn was an underdog to Clemson. That wasn't a shocker. The 2 that did surprise me, LSU losing as a double-digit favorite to Wisconsin and Mississippi State getting upset by South Alabama. Mississippi State clanking a field goal late there that could have won it. That was one that nobody saw coming. Awful loss for the Bulldogs. And Tennessee does deserve to take some heat. That is fair. The Vols are a top 10 team with a ton of hype, and they barely, and I mean barely, got by Appalachian State in overtime. However, let's not forget what Alabama from the SEC did to USC. Trojans are a top 25 club. They got destroyed 52-6 at AT&T Stadium, the home of the Cowboys. Bama put up half a hundred on USC. Trojans went without a touchdown for the first time since 1997. It is their most lopsided loss since 1966. That was a 51-0 rout versus Notre Dame. And oh boy, when we get to the Irish in a bit. Plus, USC's Jabari Ruffin stepped on an Alabama player late in the first half. He was ejected. Good call there. Get him out of there. Alabama's good enough. You don't need to give them any extra motivation to beat you down, which is what happened here. Freshman quarterback Jalen Hurts, he threw for two scores. He ran for two more. It just never seems to matter that the Tide does not have an experienced quarterback. I mean, they just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. Some other top five teams were not as fortunate on Saturday. Number five, LSU, lost to unranked Wisconsin 16-14 at Lambeau Field. What a setting there. I mean, that place was going nuts. Badgers should have been up more than 6-0 at half. They could not seal the deal in the red zone. The Tigers' offense was absolutely pathetic. I had to break out my rusty nail and jab myself in the eyeball multiple times. It was that hard to watch. I thought that Brandon Harris would be better now that he's a junior. He got plenty of big game experience last year. But, and this is a fat Albert-sized but, it was the same old Brandon Harris. Only 131 yards passing, two interceptions, including the nail in the coffin with a minute to go. LSU's only down two. It's first down, and he throws the ball right to Dakota Dixon. What are you thinking? I mean, what are you looking at there? A field goal can win you the game. Dixon then got leveled by big Josh Booty, who was rightfully ejected. Now, Les Miles claimed after the game that he's not a malicious kid and that he didn't realize that Dixon had already gone down. Sure looked like a blatant cheap shot, and he has been suspended one game. I'm sure he was frustrated. LSU was fortunate just to be in that game. Bart Houston in his first start threw a pick six in the third quarter, and that got the Tigers back in it at 13-7. 1 minute later, LSU had the lead. I mean, this was shocking that they could play like that and actually be in front. A 47-yard field goal by Wisconsin put the Badgers back in front with 3:47 left. A clutch kick there. What I couldn't understand was after the game, I heard a number of media bobbleheads downplaying this loss for LSU. Are you serious? Your coach is on the hot seat. You have 17 starters back. You still have to play Alabama. You have to go to Auburn, to Florida, and to Texas A&M. You know, and you're acting like this isn't a big deal. Now the Tigers have to run the table to get into the national semifinals. That's not going to happen. This was a huge loss for LSU. Huge. And anyone who downplays that is clueless. I mean, this was a team that had hopes of winning a title. They weren't about going 9-3 or 10-2. And the offense is horrendous again. Leonard Fournette ran for 138 yards. He was a non-factor for half of that football game. He's too good for that to happen. Opponents are just going to keep loading up the box, put eight guys in there all the time, and see if Harris can beat them throwing. And they have good receivers. You know, they should be able to do something. LSU wasn't the only top five team to get an L. Number 3, Oklahoma, lost at number 15, Houston, 33-23. Greg Ward Jr. threw for 321, two touchdowns. He is legit if you haven't watched him play. Brandon Wilson made an unbelievable game-turning play, maybe the play of the weekend. He took a missed 54-yard field goal to the house to give Houston a 26-17 lead in the third quarter. He went coast to coast, and he had to check his feet when he first caught the missed field goal. He thought he might be out of bounds. I mean, that was a 10-point swing in the game, and the Sooners never recovered. People need to give the Cougars some respect. They beat Florida State by two touchdowns in the Peach Bowl last year. Now they beat the Big 12's top team by 10 points. Houston was getting 12 at home in this one. No love from Vegas. They still must go to Cincinnati on a Thursday, and those Thursday games are tricky, and they have to play Louisville late in the year. But if the Cougars win out, they should be in the playoffs. They really should be. Number 2, Clemson held off unranked Auburn 19-13 Saturday night. Usually with Clemson, you're expecting 35-40 points. Did not happen. Auburn used not one, not two, but three quarterbacks, which I can't stand. Nothing seemed to work offensively, yet they had a shot late. Clemson opted not to kick a field goal on 4th and 4 from the 17. I take the 3 points there and go up 9, make it a two-score game. Clemson did not convert with 40 seconds remaining, so it's a one-score game still. Sean White got Auburn to Clemson's 40-yard line, but a couple of heaves in the end zone went incomplete. So it got a little hairy for Clemson, but they win it. Deshaun Watson, 19 of 34, 248, a touchdown, and one interception. He only ran for 21 yards. Wayne Gallman was a workhorse, 30 carries, 123, and a touchdown. Credit to Auburn's D for making it interesting. Texas A&M and UCLA also got really interesting late. Aggies were up 24-9. It looked like the Bruins were done. But in the final 5 minutes, UCLA storms back, two touchdowns and a two-point conversion, and they send the game to overtime. Last touchdown was a 62-yard pass from Josh Rosen to Kenneth Walker with 2.5 minutes to go. The crowd was all over Rosen all day long, and for some reason, he thought it was smart to egg them on. Not a bright move, but he's young, a lot of talent. In overtime, the Aggies decided to go for it on 4th down from the 1. Trevor Knight, the Oklahoma transfer, kept the ball, and he walked into the end zone. The Bruins completely bought the inside fake. Knight pulled it out, scored a gimme touchdown. UCLA could not answer in OT on the final play. Rosen threw an incomplete pass with pressure in his face. And that was the story of the game to me. UCLA's offensive line had a boatload of trouble blocking the Aggies. Miles Garrett, he's a beast for A&M. Good luck blocking that guy this year. Rosen wound up 26 of 46, 343, a touchdown, but 3 interceptions. Turnovers kill you. Knight ran for 2 scores, threw for another. Good debut for him in Aggieland. 22 of 42, 239, and a pick. A&M came in unranked. UCLA was number 16, but the Aggies were a slight favorite. So as usual, Vegas knows what it's doing there. That looked like it was a toss-up to me all the way, and it basically was. 31-24 was the final score. Number 18, Georgia, small favorite over North Carolina. It's not just a hoop school there. Tar Heels were in control of this game until a sequence in the third quarter when they were flagged for a lineman downfield. It was a very, very questionable call if you saw the replay. Then Coach Larry Fedora got really ticked off. I don't blame him. He gets an unsportsmanlike penalty, pushes the Heels deep in their own territory. What's next? A safety. And although UNC was still up 1 point, the entire complexion of the game changed right there. The Tar Heels fans in Atlanta were shocked. At one point, They scored 17 straight points, but Georgia ended the game with 19 in a row and a 33-24 victory. Freshman Jacob Eason looked good, 8-12, 131 yards and a touchdown. And what a comeback for Nick Chubb. 32 carries, 222 yards, and two touchdowns. This kid blew out his knee in a horrific injury. Now he's back and looking great. There were several feel-good stories this weekend, including Nick Chubb's big day for the Bulldogs. How about Pittsburgh's James Conner? He's now cancer-free. He scored two touchdowns for the Panthers against Villanova. He's been through so much. You have to feel good for Conner. Washington's John Ross, who tore his ACL last year, he returned with two touchdown catches and a kick return for another score versus Rutgers. Clemson's Mike Williams had a career high, 174 receiving yards at Auburn. He broke a bone in his neck on the Tigers' opening drive last season when he hit his head on the goalpost after a touchdown. I love to hear these comeback stories. We hear so many negative stories in sports and news in general every day. This was refreshing, some good stuff. Here's a story that started well but did not end well. Nebraska honored Sam Fultz by only sending 10 men onto the field in the first quarter against Fresno State. It was a very, very emotional moment. Standing ovation, a lot of tears were shed. You may recall that Fultz and former Michigan State punter Mike Sadler died in a car crash this summer. Well, then we learn that after the Fultz family left for the game in Lincoln on Saturday, some complete donkeys, I'd like to use a few other words here, but I'm not allowed. Some people broke into Sam's brother's home and his car, and they stole about $1,400 in items, including a television. I mean, how low can you possibly go? What a bunch of creeps. Total losers. I really hope they catch these punks and give them maximum fine and sentence allowable. Some people are just complete pond scum. You're stealing from a guy whose brother was just killed in July. Terrible story. Two Big Ten powers won easily. Ohio State over Bowling Green, 77-10. Michigan trounced Hawaii, 63-3. The Wolverines were given 40 points in that game and still covered with ease. Sunday night featured Notre Dame and Texas. Irish have Kaiser and Zaire back at quarterback from a 10-win squad, but a lot of new faces on defense. Texas was 5-7 last year, only a slight underdog. What do I always tell you? Let the line lead the way. And this turned into an instant classic. Shane Buechele, the first freshman to start at quarterback for Texas, and get this, 72 years. And what a show he put on. He looked like a fifth-year senior in prime time. Passed for 280 yards, two touchdowns, never looked rattled. The Longhorns led the Irish 31-14 in the third quarter. If you went to sleep, I feel bad for you there. You should have stayed up because Notre Dame has a pretty darn good quarterback too in Deshaun Kaiser. He is a big dude. Kaiser guided the Irish to three touchdown drives in the second half, and Notre Dame went from down 17 to up four in the fourth quarter. Kaiser finished with five touchdown passes and a 29-yard touchdown run. So he had six combined touchdowns. The Longhorns put together a 68-yard TD drive to briefly take the lead at 37-35 with 3.5 minutes to go. Then chaos, the twilight zone. The Irish blocked the extra point. Sean Crawford went the distance, scoop and score for a rare two-point play on the return. I mean, that's something you just don't see every day. Bizarre play, and it tied it at 37. So we go to overtime. Each team scored a touchdown in the first OT. Notre Dame settled for a 39-yard field goal in double overtime, setting the stage for big number 18. Tyrone Swoops. They call it the 18-wheeler package because he wears 18. This kid is 6'4", 250. He's the backup quarterback for the Horns. He rumbled 6 yards for the game-winning touchdown, and it was party time in Austin. His third touchdown of the game, 50-47, was the final. Now, normally, I don't like these games where there's no defense at all. 961 total yards. But this was a phenomenal game. Very, very entertaining. 102,000 in attendance, making a lot of noise. Great environment. And they got their money's worth and then some. And Texas has found its quarterback in Shane Buechele, a freshman. What a bright future. You would have to think Notre Dame will stick with Kaiser over Malik Zaire after a 6-touchdown performance on the road. But what a weekend of college football. Week 2 is probably going to be a big, big letdown coming up. But at least we have the NFL now. So if you want to weigh in on college football, all the games that I talked about, let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT, TheSportsRPT, and jump on board to get your NFL predictions in. Tell me what you like, what you don't like with my predictions for 2016. Again, on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I'll talk to you again next Monday. This has been episode number 433 of The Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.